This is Clay from Skilled Gentlemen Podcast. You're listening to Handgun World Podcast with Bob Main.
Hello, shooters and concealed carriers. Have you ever talked to somebody who is anti-gun? Or did you used to be anti-gun at one time and maybe had a conversion? How difficult was it having a conversation with that anti-gun person that just didn't see the need to own guns for self-defense like you and I do? Or what circumstances changed your mind about how you feel about guns? Those subjects and more coming up in this episode of the Handgun World Podcast. Hi, I'm Bob Main. I'm your host. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. To start off this episode, I want to talk about some exciting stuff. Ben Branham and I are doing a training class. We're teaching together Pistol Fighting Dynamics, The Art of the First Hit. Pistol Fighting Dynamics, The Art of the First Hit, January 21st, 2017. It's a one-day class in San Antonio, and we're going to be going all over the country in 2017. That's going to be the first class that we're going to teach, and we're going to do it here in our home city of San Antonio. But we're going to Utah, we're going to Ohio, we're going to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, we might be going to Kansas and Illinois, possibly even out to Fort Discovery again in western Washington, and maybe even up to the state of Maine. So be listening to this show and be listening to Ben Branham's Modern Self-Protection Show and be watching the website and the Facebook pages for official announcements. But I can officially announce January 21st, 2017, Pistol Fighting Dynamics. You can go ahead and get signed up and take advantage of the early bird special. Well, I had a chance to interview Weird Beard. And Weird Beard's been on several podcasts, and you're going to hear him talk about the podcasts that he's been on: Gun Blog, Variety Cast, Handgun Radio, some other appearances. I'll let him talk about that because you're going to hear about it in the interview. But it's about the fact that he used to be anti-gun and had a transformation, and he also talks about what's it like interacting with people who are anti-gun, and you just simply want to have a conversation with them to possibly persuade them. And there's an art to doing that. So let's get right into it.
Hi, I'm Paul Lathrop. I'd like to talk with you about the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. As many of you know, you'll likely have to win two fights if you have to use your gun in self-defense. The first fight is the gunfight itself. The second fight is the fight to clear your good name through the legal system. You don't need to draw your gun to find yourself in a legal battle for your life and freedom. Even if you do everything right, you may still be prosecuted, which could cost you tens of thousands of dollars. The Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network is an official sponsor of the Self-Defense Radio Network, and they will completely take that worry away by giving you financial assistance and legal assistance if you have to use your gun in a legitimate self-defense situation. In my case, it was $12,500 just to get out of jail and get the attorney started on my case. Don't let an overzealous anti-gun prosecutor make your life miserable because you chose to legally defend yourself. Sign up at armedcitizensnetwork.org for only $135 for the first year and discounted renewals. Please use the tracking code 15625 or Paul Lathrop when contacting them. Doing so will financially help the Self-Defense Radio Network without having to spend any extra money. Or you can call 360-978-5200 and just tell them Paul sent you.
Well, my special guest for this episode is Weird Beard, and he is on several other podcasts out there. Welcome to the show, Weird.
How you doing, Bob?
I am doing pretty good. You know, I'm living a gifted life, as I like to say.
Yeah, no, it's good times. We're living the dream here in podcast land. We are living the dream in podcast land. I want to let people know that are listening to this, you're on some other podcasts out there. Talk about some of the other work that you do.
Yeah, so my my blog is weirdworld.com, and I podcast out of the Squirrel Report is one of my home bases. I also am a member of the Gunblog Variety Cast, and I'm a frequent guest host on Handgun Radio.
Okay, good. Weirdworld.com is your blog,
yep,
right?
That's W-E-E-R-D. I spell funny.
W-E-E-R-D-world.com.
Weird beard, yeah. Weird world, yeah, never mind.
Weirdworld.com.
Yep.
Good, yeah, I know I've heard you on Handgun Radio and, of course, on the Gun Blog Variety Cast and good stuff. You had a really good idea here. You wanted to come on my show, and I appreciate it because the subject we're going to talk about is something that, you know, I've been kind of putting out an invitation on my show almost since day one, and I've been doing this over 7 years now. And the invitation has been for somebody who is anti-gun to at least just come on and interview with me. I'm an easygoing guy, but I would love to get an anti-gunner on here and ask him some questions. But you used to be anti-gun, didn't you?
I did. Absolutely used to be anti-gun.
Well, okay, so that's close. That's close to having an anti-gunner on this podcast. You're pro-gun, obviously, but you used to be anti-gun. Why?
So I was born in Portland, Maine, which growing up there, people would refer to as North Massachusetts, which I would get very, very upset at when people would call me that because Mainers and Massachusetts people have quite a rival. We call them massholes. And, but I will say now that I live in Massachusetts, I live just north of Boston now. Yeah, no, they're not that wrong. So Southern Maine is very, very liberal. And, specifically the Portland area is pretty bad. And, specifically my parents are anti-gun people, still really are anti-gun people.
They are.
And so growing up, I mean, it was kind of weird because in New England, like I always had a really good, like most people that are either pro-gun or anti-gun really, you know, aren't necessarily, there's many people that really aren't that concerned with the Second Amendment. And certainly a lot of anti-gun people really don't seem to have all that much concern or respect for the Second Amendment. But when you live in New England, there's a lot of markers out there stating how many British soldiers are buried underneath this stone and where this battle was fought. So the idea of average citizens taking up arms against their government is pretty well understood, at least to me it was. But at the same time, you know, here we're talking, you know, I'm 37 years old, so I was a teenager in the 90s. You know, hearing all the one-sided media, and there was no internet to counter that. And while I had a lot of relatives that were hunters and had guns, and, you know, you'd go into somebody's house and there'd be a glass-faced gun cabinet, you know, in the living room, or a rifle or a shotgun hanging on the wall. But yeah, really, there really weren't any what we would consider just, you know, modern day, you know, Second Amendment activists / shooters. There, I mean, these days are definitely the type of people that might go through, a box of ammo every couple of years, sighting in the rifle, going out into the woods, maybe loosing one round at a deer or something, and then at the end of that. So when I suddenly started hearing all the propaganda that was coming about, specifically the Clinton assault weapons ban, was really kind of my introduction to gun rights. Really, it just sounded like guns are really bad ideas. They cause a lot of stuff. There were a few mass shootings around there, and I knew a few people who carried, and I just thought, man, they're kind of nutty, because, yeah, I guess you can carry that gun, but nobody ever uses a gun in self-defense, because you'd never hear about self-defense cases.
Only a couple thousand times a year, right? Is that what it is? Isn't that what it is? Something like 2,000 times a year?
I think 100,000 is the number. Is the low number I hear?
Okay.
Yeah.
So, oh boy, I was way off on that.
And that number came out of that's a fairly old number now. I think that number is late 90s, you know, early 2000s, back when still concealed carry was still really not as big a thing as it is now. So
Yeah.
You got to wonder. So when the Clinton assault weapons ban went through, I mean, number one, I thought they were banning machine guns. I thought you could walk into any, you know, hardware store or gun shop or sporting goods store and walk out with an M60 or something like that. And so, yeah. Things like, you know, the Clinton assault weapons ban mentions one of the banned features being a grenade launcher. I mean, if you looked into it a little bit, you know, it's not a, you know, center fire grenade launcher, but a rifle grenade adapter. And so, but I was thinking, oh man, why are people buying grenade launchers? Why are people needing heavy artillery? So absolutely thought the assault weapons ban was a marvelous idea and thought it was.
So what did your parents teach you about being, or about guns when you were little?
So not a lot. Like, I actually remember here's a great indicative thing of my parents' teachings. I remember watching an action movie with my father, and it was some sort of cop film, and someone had reached into the trunk of a car and pulled out a handgun and racked the slide. And I said to my dad, Dad, what does that actually do? I see people racking the slide on a handgun. What does that do? And my dad went, I don't know. You know, and,
really? What he said. Yeah. Huh?
Did not know. Did not know. I don't know if my dad's ever shot a semi-auto. He says he shot a pistol, but given that he's an older gentleman, you know, pistols used to be revolvers too.
But at that you're right. But at that time, he did not know what racking the slide was. Interesting.
Did not know what exactly that was doing mechanically with the gun.
But you were taught that guns were bad.
Guns were bad. Guns were not something that you wanted to have. They were not safe. I remember my mom telling me actually, if somebody was ever shooting a gun around my school, I was to lay down and play dead. So yeah, no, the guns were. I mean, they weren't necessarily fully bad. They weren't. Again, we had relatives that were hunters. I mean, most of my extended family owned guns, and actually my father owned guns. He grew up in northern Maine on a farm, and so he had a 22 single shot rifle, and he sent away for a break act in the Sears catalog, put cash in an envelope and a Sears catalog form, sent away for a break action 410. And there was a mistake in the mail and got a Mossberg 16-gauge slug gun.
Wow, what a stroke of luck, huh?
Well, that was exactly it. Again, going on to my father's knowledge of guns is he didn't know – he knew what he got wasn't what he ordered, and ended up talking to some family friend, and he looked it over and essentially told him, yeah, error's in your favor. Don't mention this to Sears. And he did used to go hunting with my family, and I've got to assume they didn't wear ear protection back then or all that, but it sounds like hunting for my father was very, very unpleasant. And my father was a math teacher for a number of years, so my dad was definitely a bookworm. So also I got to imagine that wandering out in the fields and getting muddy and dirty and going after animals and shooting guns that he was never really good at was just the least amount of fun. But for whatever reason, he kept the guns with him, did nothing with them. They ended up both rusting, you know, almost to states of complete disrepair. Got rid of the shotgun to someone he actually worked with that was a shooter, and that guy evidently got the shotgun working. And I actually tried to I got my dad to give the 22 rifle to a friend of mine who was a manufacturer at the time, and I said, look, just cut this thing up, cut it up, because I'm worried that my father's going to pass away, and my mom, being the fastidious cleaner that's going to be, is going to throw a live firearm into a dumpster, and then they're going to discover that my mom had improperly disposed of a firearm, Murphy's Law and all that. And actually turned out my buddy went against my wishes and got the gun working again and repaired it to a beautiful condition. So that's actually going to be my daughter's first rifle.
Oh, wonderful. That is really cool. That is cool. Well, in your email to me, Weird, it says that there were some events that happened that led you from being anti-gun to pro-gun. Tell me about that.
So I ended up going to school up in the University of Maine at Orono, which if you throw a dart at the state of Maine, Orono, Bangor, Orono area is the bullseye. It's dead center state of Maine, and it is out in the middle of the woods. Bangor is the biggest city near it, which is not a big city compared to most of the country, and it's an old mill town. So it's very much rural Maine. And so all of a sudden I went from being, you know, a bedroom community to Portland, Maine, and to Boston, to being, you know, essentially backcountry Maine. And so now all of a sudden I'm rubbing elbows with people my age who grew up shooting and were gun enthusiasts and Second Amendment supporters and all of that. And I found myself starting to debate them and getting my clock cleaned.
Really? Like how?
I can't really remember that well. All I remember is talking to a pro-gun person and trying to support my case and just not him having all the right answers to all my statements and me not having any counter rebuttals whatsoever, just from lack of knowledge. And you're so, right. And so now this being the late '90s, now the internet's available. So I remember sitting down at my computer and started doing research on the subject specifically so I could arm myself with enough facts that I could defend what I knew was true. And I think you know where that might have led me was
that kind of led you to a dead end, didn't it?
Yeah, I really was not finding the answers I needed. And right around this time, I had a very close friend whose father was an avid firearms collector, and he lived out in the woods and had a 100-yard range built in his backyard.
Nice.
He had pushed up a berm and had a shooting bench and just right off his back porch. And he said just one day, you know, I mean, I was always, you know, teenage boy, I was always fascinated with guns. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, hey, do you want to go shooting sometime? And it's one of those like, yeah, why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I want to go shooting?
Ah, there we go. Take an anti-gunner shooting.
Yes. And so he, and I wasn't rabidly anti-gun. It wasn't like I was calling this guy a baby killer or anything.
Right.
But I was definitely apprehensive about it. But yeah, got shooting, and specifically his father had a Colt 1911 A1 that I fell completely in love with, and I still carry a 1911 to this day. That was the first handgun I ever bought, was a 1911, for this exact reason.
Good.
But I ended up shooting some guns, so I started getting the physics behind it, and, you know, I realized, like, oh, I, you know, now I know what a .30-06 looks like, and I know what a .223 looks like. And .30-06 was always kind of the good gun. That was what all the hunters shot with their walnut and blued steel bolt action rifles. And then there's the evil .223 that's too powerful to hunt deer with its little .22 bullet and its little small casing and.
Too powerful.
Oh yeah, I mean you had to have heard some of that, of the, you know, why would anyone hunt with an AR-15? What's there going to be left of the deer?
Yeah, I've heard stuff like that, or I've heard this garbage like, if you need an AR-15 to hunt, you're not a very good hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really stupid, because you have to actually be an excellent hunter and an excellent shot to make a clean kill on most decent-sized deer with a .223.
Well, I mean, and then there's also another argument to be made of the, well, great, yes, well, I could go and buy a falling block, you know, Ruger number 2 or Ruger number 1 or a Mauser action gun for hunting deer, but then if I bought an AR-15, I've got an accurate rifle for hunting deer, and or an AR-10 is even better. Because that's in 308. Mm-hmm. That's straight up hunting caliber. And yet I've also got something that can be easily utilized as a defensive firearm. So it's just an economical choice.
Exactly. So you got around all these hunters and people took you shooting, right?
Yep. So people took me shooting, and my big turning point was when I realized that the federal assault weapons ban was a complete lie. Essentially, that was. My getting some knowledge on how a firearm actually worked, and you know what the different cartridges looked like and how they performed, and then taking that knowledge and then looking at rereading the federal assault weapons ban, and I realized this is just nothing but they lied to me. And that's a big reaction. I mean, the day I discovered that professional wrestlers weren't actually jump kicking each other and slamming each other on the mat, I never watched another day of wrestling again. You guys lied to me.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, you know, and it's all entertainment. Of course, we all know that. So you then realized that how much of a lie the assault weapons ban was. Was that just from reading and talking to people who were into guns? Is that how you realized that?
Almost exclusively from reading. Was the people who were into guns that, you know, that I shot with weren't necessarily rabid Second Amendment people, and there really wasn't a lot of talk on gun control because things were actually pretty quiet at that time.
Yeah.
So it was really mostly just reading and just realizing, okay, well, this is all a bunch of lies. So my next solution, that wasn't the turning point, neither was me shooting, actually. So the interesting thing with me falling in love with a 1911 is, all right, now I wanted a 1911. Like, that is a really great gun. I really like shooting them. It fits my hand like a glove. Oh, so much fun. Now, I don't think everyone should be able to have one, but I think I should have one. very much the I'm a gun owner but was my mentality at that point in time. I still don't even know the laws full enough to know that I was 19 years old and I couldn't just walk into a shop and buy a 1911, but I was also a college student, so I didn't have any money.
Right.
So just learning that. So my next step was, well, clearly there's a bunch of lies from the anti-gun side. It can't be that simple. I'm going to go put the NRA under a magnifying glass and try to find where they're lying.
Okay.
And I couldn't.
Couldn't find where they're lying.
I really couldn't. I mean, you know, still to this day, I mean, now that I'm, you know, deep in the weeds of it, yeah, ever so often Wayne LaPierre says something, I go, oh, come on. But that's minutia. When it comes down to just something so simple as directly, you know, misleading people, showing people on the news shooting a full auto AK-47 and then talking about the federal assault weapons ban and people saying these guns are too powerful to hunt deer with when they are less powerful than all of the most common deer hunting guns. And, you know, in the case of many states, illegal to hunt deer with because they don't meet the caliber restriction. I couldn't find anything analogous of that. And that was where my turning point happened, was just the, oh man, this is something that needs to be spoken out about. This other people need to start hearing. And so that was my conversion.
Well, good. That's interesting. So you had that gradual conversion and a complete conversion, we know. Mm-hmm. You also said something about now you've interacted with anti-gun people who didn't really follow the same path you did.
Yes. Well, I mean, so there's two types of anti-gun people. There are people who are anti-gun like me, which is, if you ask them, you know, do you think people should have guns? How do you feel about guns? No, I don't like them. No. Yeah, no, if there's a restriction going through, yeah, no, I think that's probably a good idea. And then there are the people that, you know, when you think of an anti-gunner, you think about, you know, I mean, George Takei's got his new political action group. You've got Michael Bloomberg. These people that put gun control, Hillary Clinton, put gun control as part of their identity.
Right.
And definitely people, I mean, my wife, who, you know, who was then my girlfriend, was anti-gun as well. She grew up in the same neighborhood as I did, and also from fairly liberal parents. And so therefore she was, you know, very much afraid of guns, not interested in guns. She was actually quite upset with me the day I brought my first 1911 home and, you know, was like, you're not going to buy any more, are you? I think I'm going to buy more. Yeah.
Got in trouble.
I did not get in trouble.
Oh, you did not get in trouble. Oh, okay.
But it was definitely a contested issue. But I said to her, I said, look, I don't want you, you know, I don't want you touching this gun until you know how to shoot it. And so, you know, you can like it, you can dislike it, but I'm going to teach you how to safely, you know, safely handle this firearm.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, that of course meant that I took a brand new shooter to the range with a 1911, not the smartest choice in 45, not the smartest choice,
I would agree. Not quite the smartest to put into a new shooter's hands, but yeah. It's been done, and it can work. It can work out.
Yes, it has been done. It can work out. But it's the absolute opposite. My wife is actually really interesting. She's recoil adverse, but she's also even more recoil reverse to heavy guns. Is holding the gun out there and having it be heavy is far more pleasant to her than having a gun kick. So actually, her favorite gun to shoot is a lightweight J-frame, believe it or not.
No kidding.
Guys, just so you know, don't take my wife as an example.
Yeah, exactly. That's not the norm.
But took her out, just taught her the four rules of gun safety, taught her how to safely handle the firearm, taught her how to load it and unload it. And also on top of that, since this was in Massachusetts now, in Maine, there are shooting clubs in Maine, but there aren't that many. It's mostly you go into somebody's backyard, go into somebody's cow pasture, go into a sand pit somewhere that's not posted, and you shoot, and then you pack out your stuff. But this was a, you know, solid, well-built, wonderful gun club. And I think my wife had a real, you know, real interesting moment of seeing that it wasn't a bunch of guys in cowboy hats with bullets whizzing overhead or all that. It was just very calm, very controlled, very methodical. And most people who haven't shot don't realize how relaxing it is. They think it would be anything but. They think it would be nothing but a just huge adrenaline rush of the shooting a firearm. But in fact, once you're focusing on your front sight and your trigger press, you really kind of get into a very relaxed groove.
Well, you know, it wasn't a bunch of cowboys with bullets flying overhead because you were in Maine. See, down here in Texas, that's what we have.
Well, not the bullets flying overhead, I hope.
No, but we have all the cowboys, right?
Yes.
You know, we got all the cowboys riding horses and carrying six shooters, and that's Texas. You know, I don't know if you know that or not.
Yeah, everyone owns an oil well.
And everybody has an oil well, yeah. And it's, oh, man, some of the stereotypes about us Texans just drives me nuts.
Oh, I mean, I get some of those. I'll be talking to somebody online and they won't know me and they'll be like, oh, you're from down south. You're from Texas, aren't you?
Yeah. And then what do you say?
No. I'm a scientist and I live just north of Boston.
And, you know, not to get too far off track, but, you know, my uncle who is no longer alive today, but he moved to Texas probably 15 years ago or something like that. And before he moved, he sent me an email and he said, so what is it like living in the desert? And he thought that coming to Texas was going to be living in the desert.
Well, and if anybody, which part of Texas?
Yeah, well, most part of Texas is, but he was moving to Dallas.
Yep.
And he was moving to Dallas and he wanted to know what it was like living in the desert. And he wanted to know what to prepare for. And, of course, anybody who's ever been to Dallas or listens or lives in Dallas, knows it's absolutely no desert.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry to get off track.
Oh, no worries.
So you've had some interactions. So have you talked to people that maybe were anti-gun or still anti-gun after your transformation?
I've definitely changed some people's minds. I've definitely converted a lot of people, and these have all been just in my day-to-day interactions of just people just pointing out misconceptions and getting to think over things. And I don't know if I've necessarily made, you know, too many dyed-in-the-wool gun nuts like me out of it, but I've definitely gotten a whole lot of people that are definitely more willing to leave us the hell alone when it comes to policies and to realize that, oh, things aren't exactly what the media tells us about guns and gun owners and violent statistics and things like that. But now, on the other hand, again, mention I have a blog and I do podcasts. So yeah, no, and on the Gun Blog Variety Cast, I do This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery is the name of my segment. I give rebuttals to anti-gun arguments and find anti-gun. It's usually audio or visual components that I play what they say and I point out where the problems with what they say are. And that's, of course, done with me talking against the recording, but I've absolutely talked to them in person, and that can get ugly real fast sometimes.
Really? Like how?
Well, I've definitely had some threats given. I'm not going to go too deep on that. Nothing all that serious. I contacted the police, but it was I never thought it was going to go that far. I knew where the person was coming from, and they didn't live anywhere near me, but they definitely crossed some boundaries that I didn't like. A lot of boundary crossing of the not instead of arguing with the points that I'm trying to make, arguing with my arguing more for me personally, and I go by my pseudonym Weirdbeard just to again protect my family. My wife's a very private person, does not want us to be her to be on the forefront of what I'm doing as well. But definitely, I was named in the Huffington Post by Josh Horowitz. I think it was Ladd Everett who wrote it the CSGV. What is that? The Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. Stating specifically by my given name that I was personally responsible for the man who shot up the TSA checkpoint LAX, because I'm also adamantly against the TSA.
Oh, give me a break! Yeah. And they knew your given name.
They had figured it out somehow. I fully tracked down how that came across, but they figured it out, and it's not that big a deal. But again, the fact that I do my public activism under, I mean, I, when I'm actually meeting someone in person, I'm going by my real name, but my activism online is all done under this pseudonym. For them to cross over into that, they're doing that for a reason.
Wow. So that's unfortunate that you've had that kind of interaction. And by the way, your segment, Anti-Gun Nuttery, on the Gun Blog Variety Cast, is very good. I've listened to it several times. You do a good job with that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
And you research it very well, too. That's the most important thing to making it quality.
Well, it's a lot of work, and my point is it's not just to be a punching bag. Because, again, I'd love it for an anti-gunner to come on and debate, but they really don't. I can get back into that. But for this week in Anti-Gun Nuttery, it's really the point of what I'm doing is finding the common talking points, because we all kind of have our own hive mind. You know, people are listening to this podcast. They're pro-gun like we are. And so they're going to hear what we're saying, and they're going to hear something good, and they're going to repeat something that we've said. And stuff gets repeated, and stuff gets chosen. We've got our bumper stickers, you know, when seconds count, the police are minutes away, you know, outlaw all guns, only outlaws will have guns, and, you know, things like that that just get repeated over and over again. Well, the anti-gunners have the exact same thing, and while there's – geez, was it – Is it Josh Horowitz who wrote the? Someone from the Brady campaign wrote a book on the NRA's bumper sticker slogans, but never actually rebuts any of them. There's not really any rebuttal to them. Yeah, they're bumper sticker slogans. They're kind of they're recycled logic, but at the same time, they're pretty solid.
Well, they're based on truth.
They're absolutely based on truth. But the anti-gunners, they have their talking points, and they're almost always based on manipulations of the facts, twisting around, like, you know, saying, oh, the United States has 10 or 100 times, whatever the number of gun deaths than any other high income country, not at war, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when you dive down into that, I mean, number one, they're saying gun deaths, not deaths in general. So, you know, a place like Glasgow, Scotland has got some of the highest murder rates in the entire Western world.
They don't talk about that, though.
They don't talk about that, and it doesn't get talked about much, because the Scots have never really embraced. There hasn't really been that much gun, firearms. The gun crime that happens in the UK happens in the southern sections of it, not up north. The Scots really just like to stab each other and stomp each other's heads in with steel-toed boots. I mean, that's what the Glasgow smile, if you will. We don't have anything close to that.
The reason that happens there, you know, is because they haven't banned the knives and the boots. That's why.
They haven't banned the boots. They have banned the knives.
Oh, okay. Well, but next they got to ban the boots.
Yes, they do have to ban the boots. But
they've banned the knives, and the stabs keep happening, though, right?
Stabs keep happening.
It's interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
But again, it's just I guess you could call it culturally. I mean, I'm not going to profess to speak for the Scots, but they've never embraced shooting each other. But they'll stab each other and beat each other to death, no problem. And they've got an extremely high murder rate. They've got an extremely low gun death rate. And then when you look at the high income country, you know, qualifier, that is absolutely just cherry picked numbers where they've actually taken several high income countries, Mexico being actually the most prevalent one, and just throw it out, just not even use it because, you know, Mexico's got a much higher gun death rate than us. And so that's kind of my whole point, is to give ammunition to our side so that when you're, you know, sitting across the lunch table or sitting around the water cooler or watching the local sports game and somehow gun control comes up, you're not going to get caught flat-footed. You're going to have some answers preloaded. You're going to have some knowledge to base on, so that not only can you maybe regurgitate some talking points, but also maybe start it on your way of having downright knowledge that you can organically have a discussion on. No, gun control's really not a good idea.
Okay, now I'm glad you brought this up. I'm glad you brought up having some ammunition in the form of facts. So we got about 10 minutes left. Give listeners a couple of ideas as to how they would start their conversation with somebody that they know is specifically anti-gun. And let's say it's a conversation and a very mild debate, not an argument. What would you suggest?
I would suggest, I mean, I always find step one is just to talk to the other person and see why are they, do they dislike guns? Why do they want there to be more restrictions?
That's a good question.
And, you know, there's any number of things that you can go to where you can say, oh, I think, you know, we need to have, you know, more restrictions because it makes it safer. Then you can talk about places like Los Angeles and Chicago and, you know, Boston and Newport, Connecticut and New York City, where they have all the gun control laws that they want. And yet at the same time, they still got a lot of violent crime. You could talk about, if they talk about like, oh, the United States has got such a gun violence problem, you can point out the fact that we really don't have a violence problem at all. We're, you know, actually a fairly safe nation if you consider all the nations as a whole, you know.
Right.
And even when you consider quote unquote high income countries, our violence rate isn't particularly high. And even in the places where it is particularly high, it's clustered in inner city areas, if you want to get a little bit off the whole gun thing, I mean, one of my big politics things is I'm really upset with the war on drugs, because really, let's face it, any place that, I mean, like, I live near Boston, and 90% of Boston's a really safe place. I would walk over 90% of Boston any hour of the day, you know, sundown to sun up, first, you know, early in the morning, with no fear, and I would just stay away from a couple of very, very small geographical areas, like, you know, a square mile or so of the city of Boston that's not even in one spot. Because overall, most of it's very, very safe, and there's just areas that are just heavily controlled by the gangs, and those are the spots where you're constantly reading about. I mean, when you read about a dead body showing up in the city of Boston, you know, or even Chicago, they always talk, it's south side of Chicago, that, you know, you never hear about you hear about these huge numbers of deaths in Chicago, but they're never in Hyde Park.
No, they're not in the northern suburbs.
Exactly. And it's because there are certain areas that are controlled by the gangs. And why do the gangs have the power to control that? Because the gangs have drugs and prostitution, and that makes them lots and lots of money, which is very attractive for new people to join into the gangs and all of that. And so I'm kind of a crazy libertarian in that sense of we really need to kind of end the war on drugs, and certainly anything you can do for free, if you want to exchange some money for it, it shouldn't be a crime.
You have a point on that. You have a point on that. There's a couple of other things that can kind of go against that, but you got a really good point.
Absolutely. And again, I admit, and that's a topic for not even a different time, but a totally different podcast.
Yeah, that's true. So what else would you tell somebody would you ask somebody that might be anti-gun? I mean, asking them why they are anti-gun is a great question. Where else would you go with that conversation?
I mean, just talking about, I mean, one great thing is just the fact of how much we have succeeded in the Second Amendment is that, you know, back in the early 90s, when I was first learning about guns and gun violence, carry was pretty much illegal in this country.
Yeah.
It certainly was down in Texas. I don't know if you're originally from Texas, but,
I'm not originally from Texas. No.
Where are you originally from?
Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, even better.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. Carry was almost completely illegal. Of the states that allowed carry, they were may issue. And right. Now it's only, you know, the few may issue states, Massachusetts being one of them, unfortunately, are old guard. It's grandfathered in. You know, when Chicago and Wisconsin switched over to pro gun, they went way pro gun.
Yes, they sure did. That's great to see too.
Yeah. So we've had all of this. Of course, I mean, I just recently renewed my carry permit. It's actually my permit to own in Massachusetts. Renewed that, and it took them almost 6 months to renew it. I sent my application in 3 months early just to make sure that they had plenty of time to process it, and I was going around with a permit that said it was expired, but technically by the statute was still valid because your permit is valid for 3 months after it expires if your paperwork is in processing. And mm-hmm. I almost had a point where me and my entire gun collection was illegal because there were so many people applying for gun permits. And these are not, you know, this is not somebody buying more guns. You know, this is not one, you know, one crazy gun nut like me buying, you know, 30 more guns. This is hundreds of new people buying their guns for the first time.
Right.
And that's everywhere. Every place was experiencing, you know, a couple of years ago was experiencing carry permit delays. And these are people that new to the fold. I mean, the fact that 22 disappeared for so long is stating that so many new people were getting into the fold. I've got more 22s than I know what to do with, and I spend most of my time shooting centerfire stuff. 22's fun, but when the 22 dried up, I just stopped shooting 22. But when I was new to it, I shot a lot of 22, and my first shots were on 22. And when I take someone new to the range, I'm bringing 22s. So the fact that 22 is disappearing really is saying something about how many people were buying guns and how many more people are carrying and owning firearms, and yet violent crime is going down.
Yeah.
Now I'm always very careful not to overstate things. I will not say, you know, I respect John Lawton. He's a great man, and I agree with his work, but I'm not going to be as bold as him in saying more guns, less crime. But I will point out that if you have more guns and you have less crime, while that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, me and everybody else buying guns and carrying guns on a daily basis reduce the crime rate, you certainly cannot say that gun control reduces the crime rate. Because if repealing gun laws reduces the crime rate, correlation does not equal causation, but correlation is required for causation.
Oh, very good point. Very good point. See, and you're actually talking about facts, and you're talking about logic, which the anti-gunners, they can't get into that because they don't have the facts and the logic to back up their side because it doesn't exist.
And one other thing to point out with is, and I like this argument just as a thought experiment to keep people thinking, is depending on where you are. I mean, you know, I work in the city of Boston, so we've got subways. So you'll be standing on, and I take the train to work every day. So you'll be standing on the train platform or the subway platform, and the subway train will be coming into the station, and you'll be standing just on the other side of the yellow line that's there. It's super easy for someone just to push you in the way of that train. And, you know, for if you don't live in a place that's got public transportation, you've got roads and you got sidewalks. How easy is it for you just to turn that when you're, let's say you're driving, just to turn that wheel just a couple degrees and jump that curb and climb over someone on the sidewalk?
Ah, interesting.
And yeah. It doesn't happen, and nobody's terrified on the sidewalk. I mean, it's I've got a 3-year-old, and yeah, no, she knows that the sidewalk is the safe place, and she'll, you know, she has to hold my hand when we're in the street, but when the sidewalk, she can let go of my hand and run along on her own, and everybody else is the same way. Sidewalk's a safe place, and you're good, but all it takes is someone to drive over there, and that's foolishness. That's outrageous. Or, you know, someone just pushing you in the way of the subway car. But yet somehow when it comes to somebody having a firearm, and of course it's always many people that aren't hardcore anti-gunners will be like, well, no, I'm weird. I'm perfectly comfortable. Or Bob, I'm perfectly comfortable you owning guns. I know you. You're a nice guy. You're good people. So you can have guns, but it's this mythical other person that doesn't exist. But yet that mythical other person just drove by you in a car. That mythical other person was standing behind you on the subway platform or standing with you at the bus stop as the bus was pulling in, and they could have totally pulled you in. Or, you know, that other person could just, you know, hit you over the head with a baseball bat. But yet they don't. People are good. I mean, it's really, you know, when you come to those, like, dangerous places, on top of that, you listen to reports on, like, on gang units in cities that have big gangs, and really, they talk a lot about frequent flyers. There's really just a couple of people that are really, really bad actors that are doing most of the crimes. And it's, you know, the revolving door system. Whenever you hear about someone being murdered in, you know, in gang violence, that person's always got a rap sheet a mile long.
Right. So, and getting rid of the guns is not going to get rid of the bad actors.
But just so, but the idea is there's some sort of mythical power that's held with guns is, oh, me having a gun. But people think about, like, a mythical power of guns and making it easy to do harm to somebody, but you don't want to hurt anybody. And you know, not only is it not easy for you to hurt, just drive over somebody with a car or push someone in the way of a bus, but you don't want to. Even if you said, like, another thought experiment is, all right, let's say I'm a CIA guy and you can go and kill anybody that you want. This might not get the reaction, but for me personally, if someone said, look, you can go kill anyone you want and I'll cover it all up and it'll go away. You'll be perfectly safe. You'll be perfectly mean. But go ahead, go. You can kill one person and you get a free pass. There's no one I would do. I mean, I've gotten threats. There have been people that have threatened me and my family and have been uncouth, and I don't like these people. But they're not worth a bullet. I don't want to harm them. You know, I just want to politically defeat them and drive them into the dustbin of history. I mean, I don't want to hurt anybody. I've got no desire to. I also don't want to be hurt myself, and that's why I carry a gun.
You know, and that's interesting because that might be a good hypothetical that you could pose to somebody who's anti-gun if the conversation is still a civil conversation.
Yeah.
You know, you might want to pose that hypothetical. What if you could just kill anybody that you wanted and it was guaranteed that it would be covered up and nobody would ever know? Would you go do such a thing? And they're probably going to say no.
Yep.
And that's a good proof to them that it's what's inside of a person.
Yeah. And I would actually argue if they said yes, you know, or something to that tune, or let me think about it, they're not immediately recoil in horror at it, is maybe they haven't done, because I mean, I don't know about you, but when I suddenly started carrying a firearm, things did change a little bit. I definitely started looking at the world a little bit differently, because the hypothetical of taking somebody's life or harming somebody was definitely more of in the realm of fantasy, if you will, than reality. And all of a sudden you realize that you take things a lot more seriously, and it's not as flip as you think. Once all of a sudden it becomes very real that, ooh, that could have turned violent and could have turned violent bad. you know.
Well, and I think that you brought up a good point. I think that anti-gun people feel that just because somebody possesses a gun, that all of a sudden now that they've turned into this crazy lunatic that just wants to go out and murder people, when really murder is what comes out of a person's heart. It's not because they're possessing a gun, because people who, like you said, you brought up the issue or the example of a subway train. You know, somebody could just push you in front of the train and it's all over.
Yeah. Well, and also just the idea of, oh, I wouldn't carry a gun around because I wouldn't want to be afraid all the time that I'm going to have to use my gun. When it's really the other way around is
right.
Having a firearm, it's not that it doesn't, you know, I'm not afraid or I don't have fear, but I mean, I can't speak. I've never had to draw my gun in anger, thank goodness. But I've been in a number of instances where I've lost control of my vehicle, and that should be a very scary experience, except for the only times I've ever found myself shaking with fear was after everything cleared and everything went through and went, oh man, phew, I'm alive. Oh goodness, that could have gone far worse. But meanwhile, you hit a patch of snow and, you know, in New England and go into a skid, you're not all scared. Actually, they get that new Captain Sully movie out there. I know there was Katie Couric was asking him some, I think it was Katie Couric, someone on the news was asking him some really foolish questions of, were you thinking about the people on board? No, I was landing the plane. It took up all my thought. And I find that because I have a gun that I can go to, if things go so bad, I'm not going to have a time to be afraid. I'm really going to just be working of the, okay, this person's a threat to me. I'm de-escalating. I'm trying to get away. It's not working. I'm not scared yet because I haven't exhausted all my options. I find that I personally only find myself afraid is when I feel like I've exhausted all my options and now I'm just at the mercy of fate.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the way that gun people are. We want to exhaust all options first before going to the gun, and a lot of anti-gun people don't realize that.
Yeah, and having the gun in itself is an option. So it doesn't protect you from fear, but it is comforting that if all things go completely horrible, I know that I can fight my way out of this.
Good. Weird. This was good stuff. Thanks for coming on and talking about all this, because I learned a lot just listening to this, and it's been kind of cool talking to somebody that was brought up anti-gun, yep, that had a transformation. I'm sure there's a lot of people that have a story like yours, but thanks for coming on and sharing it. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I always like to give my guests the last word, so a minute or two on what you'd like people to take away from listening to this.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, you never know. When you find someone that's anti-gun, yeah, don't be disrespectful. Don't assume anything of them. They might just be unaware of the facts. But at the same time, I would definitely argue that if the person's out there holding a sign or working for Michael Bloomberg or some other anti-control group, Just leave that one alone. Let them have what they are. They're committed to that one.
They're probably unchangeable at that point.
At least that has been my experience. Once I've dug my heels into with a diehard anti-gunner, I've always regretted it.
Weird Beard, thanks for coming on the Handgun World Podcast.
Again, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. Thanks.
Well, that was good stuff. Thanks, Weird Beard. I appreciate it. Terrific interview. If you have comments or questions, please email me or go to handgunworld.com or go to the Handgun World Facebook page. I'll put a link in the show notes. Remember, his website is weirdworld.com. Speaking of links in the show notes, you will see the sponsor in the show notes, the official sponsor of the Handgun World podcast, Concealment. Solutions, 10% off if you use the coupon code HandgunWorld on anything that they make except for the belts. And as you know, I'm a huge fan of the Outside the Waistband Cobra and also the Inside the Waistband Black Mamba CE holsters by Concealment Solutions. Once again, 10% off everything except the belts if you use the coupon code HandgunWorld. He also sells horizontal mag carriers by Magholder. And the official sponsor right now, one of them anyway, of the Self-Defense Radio Network is the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. And you heard about that earlier in the show. Make your purchases on Amazon through my Amazon store. It helps me out. You guys, lots of you do that. Thank you. You don't even have to spend any extra money. If you're going to make a purchase on Amazon, just go to handgunworld.com and go through my Amazon store link, and you'll help support the show. And don't forget, the Shooters Club, $8 a month, $75 a year. Just put up a new video on the Shooters Club. Going to put up another one in a week or two. And I probably have a good interview coming up, too, that's going to be on the Shooters Club. So, hey, $8 a month. Just about everybody can afford that. Last but not least, don't forget my voicemail. If you want to call in a voicemail comment or question, 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Thanks for listening, folks. I'm Bob Main. Remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Read your Bible every day, shoot straight, and shoot safe. I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.